Good morning. It's nice to be back and walking around and talking and doing things fairly normal when it's funny how just some mistakes with your mouth can cause you to just not be able to do all the things that you enjoy eating like, or eating, enjoy doing like eating. You know, something you take for granted, you know, you like to kind of put nourishment in your body, and it's hard to do it when your mouth is in constant pain. But you spent a lot of time talking to dentists recently, and I noticed something about the dentist that I thought was interesting is, why is it that they always like to talk to you when you're completely numb and they have something in your mouth, like a tool, or they're working, and they want to carry on a conversation? Ask you a question, your reply is, oh. And somehow they understand that. They understand that just fine. They interpret it. But I never understood that. There's a disconnect there. There's another disconnect I want to talk about this morning. But first, if you know anything about radio or television, if you've ever listened to the radio or turned on the television, which I'm sure no one here ever has, but if you've done either one of those things, you've probably been witness to broadcast delay. But when I was in, I think Siri or someone just answered my question. When I was in broadcasting school, it was called a 7-second delay. But these days, it's more like 3 seconds. And what that is what you're seeing or what you're hearing on the radio or seeing on television is delayed by a certain number of seconds. And there's a reason for that. That's because when there's a live broadcast happening, you have to be able to have some level of control over that live broadcast. In other words, if someone says something that the FCC does not want you to say on air, you want to be able to quickly take that away so that no one hears it. So there's a, nowadays, 3-second delay. And then there's on their control board what's called a dump delay button. It's literally a button that if someone says something, you hit that button and it resets the delay to zero. And all of a sudden you are immediately live. So that means that those 3 seconds that just happened are completely erased. You never hear it. It was as if it never existed. And that's also why when you're watching a news broadcast and are talking to someone live, there's always that awkward delay between when they ask them a question and they stand there for a second and then they answer. It's not because their cell service is bad, it takes a while to reach them, it's because there's that 3-second delay built in. You're witnessing that live on television. You're seeing that 3 seconds happen as they're waiting for it to reach them. So if something happens live, it can also be scrubbed quickly so that you don't see it. But a lot of people like to live their life with that dump delay button. A lot of people like to live their life with that, forget I ever heard it, forget it ever happened. A lot of people like to just pretend that they didn't see something, that it's not there anymore. You see, when Lazarus died, it was a source of great anguish for many, including Jesus. As Mary and others stood around mourning in John chapter 11, Jesus approached. Starting in verse 33, it says, "When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. 'Where have you laid him?' he asked. 'Come and see, Lord,' they replied." It says Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him." Now there are two things to note there. One, Jesus knew what he was about to do. We know that because earlier in the chapter, it says that Jesus told his disciples, you know, Lazarus is sick, but we're going to stay here for 2 days so that the glory of God can be shown. We're going to stay here for 2 days. He's sleeping, but he's going to get up. He's going to rise again. And they're like, okay, sleeping. If he's sleeping, he's going to get better. All right. So Jesus knew what was going to happen. And two, it says he was moved in spirit and he was troubled. Well, one, he was moved because he He was sad. Sometimes we overanalyze the whole thing, but he was sad. He was experiencing sadness like anyone else. He was at a funeral. He was mourning. Even though he knew what he was about to do, he knew Lazarus was about to come back. But he was also troubled. He was troubled that it had to be this way at all. That people had to die. That sin had to be in the world. That all this had to happen. That this mourning, that this difficulty, that this pain, that all this had to be here to begin with. I believe that that's the main reason that Jesus wept, that it had come to this, that this even had to be a part of life. You see, Jesus is not ignorant of the pain and suffering that humans endure because of sin. In Hebrews 4:15 it says, "For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but we have one that has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet was without sin." You see, he was full of compassion for those in need and suffering under the weight of this world. As it says in Matthew 9:35-36, Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them, because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. You see, it moved him. It moved him to tears. He had compassion on them. He could have said, "Oh, it is what it is. You know, things are the way they are." Or he could have said, "You know, you brought this on yourselves." But no, instead, he was moved. It moved him to utter distress. And also in Luke chapter 19, verse 41, as he approached Jerusalem and saw the city, he wept over it and said, "If you, even you, had only known on this day what would bring you peace, but now it is hidden from your eyes." You see, Jesus wept over Jerusalem. He said, "If you only knew, if you only knew what would bring you peace, if you only knew what you're about to do to the only one that can save you, if you only knew." And he wept over them. Here in 2022, are we losing the ability to cry? And I don't mean that simply in the literal sense of the ability to get sad and cry. But are we losing the ability to weep over what's going on around us? Are we becoming so accustomed to everything that it no longer bothers us? That it's just daily life? It's like hitting that dump delay button and all of a sudden what we just saw, what just happened, it's gone. We forget about it. We don't worry about it. Never happened. 3 seconds is gone. Is it like that for us? The definition of cognitive dissonance is the state of having inconsistent thoughts, beliefs, or attitudes, especially as related to behavior, decisions, and attitude change. In other words, losing grip with reality. Not actually seeing reality as it really is, but rather as you conceive it to be. Despite reality smacking us in the face, we refuse to act or care anymore. You know, it's just not there for us anymore. It just doesn't matter. You know, Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians 2:4, he wrote, "For I wrote you out of great distress and anguish of heart with many tears, not to grieve you, but to let you know the depth of my love for you." See, Paul's concern for the Corinthians' well-being brought him to tears because he cared. He cared about what happened to him. He cared about what was going on with him. And they had a lot of issues. They had a lot of things going on. And it brought him to tears. It moved him. In Psalm 56, verse 8, it says, "You number my wanderings, put my tears into your bottle. Are they not in your book?" The Lord knows when we hurt, when we cry over the devastation of sin around us. And he knows when we don't. He knows when we become cold to those things, when it's just the way the world is, when it's just normal to us. Jeremiah wrote in Jeremiah 9, "Oh, that my head were a spring of water and my eyes a fountain of tears. I would weep day and night for the slain of my people." Jeremiah said, "I can't cry enough. I can't care enough about my people." And again in Lamentations 3, verse 48, Streams of tears flow from my eyes because my people are destroyed. My eyes will flow unceasingly without relief until the Lord looks down from heaven and sees. When was the last time that you felt grief for the destruction of a church? As more and more people run off after the things of the world and leave the pure gospel because it's just too hard. Pure gospel doesn't really bring in a lot of numbers. So many churches are just finding other ways to get people, to draw numbers, to raise money, to build bigger places, to get bigger and bigger, but losing the pure gospel. When was the last time that you felt any grief for that? Or is it just something that happens? Just the way the world is, we say. I would venture to say, and this is where Jeff always likes to be unpopular, I would venture to say that more people care about whether the Bengals win today than they care about what happens with the church. And I'm sorry, but that is probably the truth. But let me tell you a secret. If the Bengals win, it might still snow next week. We might still get rain. The weather won't change. My kids' future won't get any brighter. The state of our economy, the state of our world won't change. All that'll happen is the Bengals will win. And that's it. But yet, we care a lot about certain things and other things we just don't think about. We don't cry about it. We don't concern ourselves with it. When was the last time you cried because more people believe that the Bible is antiquated and written to control people than those who don't? When was the last time you shed a tear about that? As the psalmist wrote in Psalm 119, 136, streams of tears flow from my eyes, for your law is not obeyed. Today's reality has become disjointed and based more on what we are told than what we see with our own eyes. There's a story you may or may not have heard that occurred in May of 2021. It was May and June. Two stories came out that were spread globally in the mainstream media. It could be read in print, it could be seen on TV, regarding two Catholic-run native schools in Canada. They had a native research organization that had long been in protest of those schools and the fact that they were built on the land, had used ground-penetrating radar and discovered over 200 mass graves on the site of one native school and over 600 mass graves on the site of the other, even though nowhere in records could be found that there were missing people or missing children or anything of that sort. But they discovered these mass graves, and outrage spread across the world. And if you didn't hear that story, what you probably did hear was the aftermath of that story. The Catholic churches and other simply churches of any type were being set on fire across Canada. There were a large number of arsons because people were upset that this happened. Some government officials in Canada even were put on the news saying, go ahead and burn these places. They deserve it. Yes, they should be burned. Yes, this should happen. Well, you know how many of those graves were found? Zero. And you know why? Because no one dug. No one looked. No one touched it. No one has been there to investigate. Nothing has happened since May or June. The only evidence that anything was found anywhere was ground-penetrating radar from the Native Research Organization. And they also said that they found children as young as three were buried there from a ground-penetrating radar taken with no digging, with no investigation, and no records. Now, I'm not telling you that to say that it never happened and to defend the Catholic Church or anything of that sort. I'm telling you that to tell you that everyone believed it, for the most part. There was great outrage. Churches were burned, regardless of their denomination or their belief. churches were burned, officials spoke up supporting it, and yet there was no evidence of anything other than some radar, which, if you know anything about radar, will only show you gaps, deformities. It won't show you bones, ages, types, nothing. And yet, it was believed. Why? Because that's the way our reality is these days. We believe what we're told. You say something, you make it well enough heard, you spread it around, and we believe it. Does truth really matter anymore? 1 Timothy chapter 4, it says, "The Spirit clearly says that in later times some will abandon the faith and follow deceiving spirits and things taught by demons. Such teachings come through hypocritical liars whose consciences have been seared as with a hot iron." Think about that. Deceiving spirits and demons dictating what Christians are taught to believe. Just doesn't sound right, does it? And yet, that's what Paul said would happen, and that's what we see happening. People are being told what they're supposed to hear, and they believe it. They embrace it. James wrote in James chapter 4, "You adulterous people, don't you know the friendship with the world is hatred toward God? Anyone who chooses to be a friend of the world becomes an enemy of God." See, God called us out of the world like rescuers leading people out of a burning building. He called us to come out of the world to bring as many as possible with us. But too many of us turn around and go back in. Like, oh, burning building, but hey, I'm just going to go back in. It's okay. It wasn't too hot in there. It wasn't too bad. We'll be all right. Have we become that desensitized? Have we become tired of being tired? You know, I feel that way very often. I get tired of just seeing the things that are going on around us, of watching it day in and day out on the news, hearing one piece of bad news after another, tired of dealing with it at work, just hearing things get worse and worse, disruptions and issues and problems. And after a while, we just get used to it, just tired of being tired. It's just like, well, whatever's going to happen is going to happen, and we don't care anymore. But then we need to look back to Jeremiah. We need to look back to Paul. We need to look back to Jesus himself, and we need to weep again. We need to care again, because when we care, we're moved to action. When we care, things can change. Things can happen. Some churches today are even celebrating sinful acts and calling it being progressive, being inclusive. We're a progressive congregation. We're an inclusive congregation. We do things that no one has ever done before. 1 Corinthians 5, verse 1, Paul says to the Corinthians, "It's actually reported that there's sexual immorality among you of a kind that does not even occur among pagans. A man has his father's wife, and you are proud. Shouldn't you rather have been filled with grief and put out of your fellowship the man who did this?" You see, they should have been weeping, but instead they were celebrating. They were proud. Pride. It's a great thing. Put up our rainbow flag because we are so proud of what we did, is essentially what they're saying here. But Paul instead says, shouldn't you have dealt with that? Shouldn't that have been a source of grief for you? Shouldn't you have cared? But instead, you're excited about it. You're celebrating it. We can't allow ourselves to be pulled under by weariness and complacency, falling under the same trap as Cain in Genesis 4, 6. The Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what is right, will you not be accepted? But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must master it." So how do we cure this? How do we come back from a broken reality, from an unfeeling and complacent heart? How do we come back from that? How do we gain the strength to care once more? Joel says in Joel chapter 2, starting in verse 12, "Even now, declares the Lord, return to me with all your heart, with fasting and weeping and mourning. Rend your heart and not your garments. Return to the Lord your God, for he's gracious and compassionate, slow to anger and abounding in love, and he relents from sending calamity." It's a beautiful verse. Joel says, even now, you can come back, return, fasting, weeping, mourning, rend your heart, not your garments. He says, don't just give this outward show of caring, of being sad, of repentance, but do it inwardly. Turn back. And the Lord is gracious, slow to anger, abounding in love. See, we need to weep again to see reality for what it is and care about the things of God again. We have to get away from turning on our own three-second delay or get away from just simply believing whatever we hear, whatever's being said around us, and caring again, caring about what God says about the state of the world and what we can do to make our little piece of the world a better place, to make more people come to Christ, to make more people understand, and not just say it is what it is. What if Jesus had come to this world, looked around and said, there's nothing I can do here? What if he'd simply said that? Where would we be today? What hope would we have? But instead, he cared. He cared enough to give himself. As the psalmist said in Psalm 34, verse 17, the righteous cry out and the Lord hears them. He delivers them from all their troubles. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. And again in Psalm 51, the sacrifices of God are a broken spirit, a broken and contrite heart, O God, you will not despise. This morning we offer the invitation as we always do. Have you found yourself growing cold? Have you found yourself just being too weary to even care anymore? Just letting the world do what it's going to do? Just living your life and not really wanting to get involved, not really caring? Do you need to come back to Christ? Do you need to give yourself to him once again? Do you need to rededicate your life? Or do you need to be baptized into Christ? Whatever your need this morning, we offer the opportunity to come right now as we stand together and sing.